Okay, thank you very much for inviting me, Catherine Klingden. And it's primarily, I think it's my little tribute to Harun Faruqi, whom I had met when he first came to India and I've been deeply impressed since then. I had met him several times afterwards, but I never got a chance to even properly mourn the loss of such a fine mind, fine investigating forensic mind he had. The ways of seeing he taught us has remained in some ways in my work. So this is for also a little bit for in memory of Harun, and also in a way partly inspired by Thomas Elsasser's very, very incisive opening remarks and the keynote address. The talk I want to talk about is about the question of informality and invisibility within courts, seeing labor with Harun in India. So I begin first by basically giving a very quick overview. What is this informal and why is it important to discuss this question? I heard several times today, and I think also yesterday, or several times more today, a kind of a puzzle about what is this labor? Are these marginal labor? Are these central to, are they productive labor? There is some confusion about what's the purpose of this? Can we put all of this into labor? What has happened to good old ideas we had about labor, about particular linked to particular types of production? Of course, those production structures have gone, but so what? Is there no bar? Is everything labor? A philosopher thinking, a beggar begging, are they all labor? I think Harun Faruqi's project, because of this the way he has done it, it's amazing that he has put on the same page forms of labor which were earlier thought of only to exist in different compartments and different times. And I think that's the most important point about the whole format of this. But so first of all, what is this? One of the ways of thinking of this, if we take it out of the understanding we have about labor or labor relations in a particular manner, is to think of what has become very popular nowadays to talk about informality and informal labor, which is another way of saying, well, they are marginal form. The real forms are actually very, very linked to well-organized circuits of production and exchange. These are not circuits of production. They're outside marginal. But the problem about this is that informal labor, how do you define informal labor? There's a long history of how people wanted to get into this concept of informal labor, but the latest and the last, I would say, definition is workers without employment security and employer-given social security. That's the first time in 2009, in the Government of India's report, it allowed people to count informal labor. Earlier, informal labor was seen as a residue. Whatever is left after you know from the registers of factories and the formal labor, once it is counted, the rest of the workforce residually was known as informal labor. But now, with this definition, it allows us for the first time to think of informal labor, count them, and actually find who is informal labor. What is informal labor? So this definition is quite crucial for looking at it. But there are problems with this definition, but I'll come to that. So in the workforce, now the problem of marginality, the kind of labor you see or you have seen depicted, or most of them appear to you as marginal, or many people think of it as marginal. But in India, 94% of the workers, 94%, are informal labor, counted this way. But what is this informal labor? 517 million people out of a 550 million workforce are counted as informal labor. Maybe this has increased further in the last 2 years. So what is this informal workforce, and what is this process by which this labor has been produced? As you know, statistics and counting only counts things, places, numbers. But what they hide is the process through which these numbers are generated. How have these people come to be called, or at least being recognized now, as informal labor? So I look at what is called the informalization process. The informalization is the process of making work and livelihood. And this is important to connect these two terms. This has not been uttered at all, labor outside or the question of livelihood. The process which makes work and livelihood precarious. Now, precarious is a kind of what you call a moving definition. What seems stable today can be precarious tomorrow. What is precarious tomorrow can become more precarious. And I distinguish between two basic processes of informalization. What I call informalization from above. Now, this is a process I think many people are familiar with, and this is the process I think in the West perhaps the dominant process. Informalization from above is where previously secure employment in large organizations, factories classically, or in big service organizations are rendered insecure. This is a very, very class, through processes of outsourcing, temporarization, precarization of many processes. The main, and this is very, very interesting, because today in India, even amongst a small informal sector, today nearly 2/3 workers, 60%, but may have increased, 60% of the workers in large organizations, and large here is defined in India as any establishment having more than 10 workers. And in amongst them, 60%, 2/3 nearly, of the workers are informal. That means you might have a huge automobile company, 2/3 of that automobile company are contract, temporary agency workers. As the core workers are shrinking, and more, the bulk of the workers are being made into informal. The main method, and I'm here telegraphically, I'm trying to shorten it synoptically to say the main method of this informalization from above is to shift from a relationship, the standard employment relationship, which was based on direct employer-employee relation, to shift it to an indirect relation, deferred relation, the relationship where you do not see the worker as having any particular relation. Direct employer-employer relationship to indirect and mediated and deferred relationship. Outsourcing, contract labor, temporary agency workers, these are the forms through which you do not see the worker. The real process by which, it's like I buy my labor, buy inputs, I buy raw material, and I buy some services of labor. Exactly in the same manner. I do not see the worker there. So I have no obligation. I do not see them. I do not have obligations for them. So this is the deferring of the direct relationship. And that's the main method through which this has happened. Okay, this is already the main method of precarization I've already talked about. But then there is the other process, which is very important. It's called informalization from below, where new workers who are continuously absorbed in informal jobs and traditional occupations, and traditional occupations, and here I want to bring in this particular question because it's very important. Traditional occupation, it be handicrafts, agriculture, or a variety of occupations, are made, rendered more and more precarious. That means even as they are being, even if you can call them traditional and informal from before, they are being rendered more and more precarious within this. We have processes by which, I'll give you one example, and it should be very important. You had huge, large textile mills, composite textile mills in Bombay or in Ahmedabad, huge mills, employing maybe 5,000, 4,000 workers at one point in one mill. Or in a city like Bombay, maybe a quarter million workers and maybe a million worker-related families were dependent on this. And when this became, this kind of thing happened, they were, the textile mills were deindustrialized. Workers moved from this to at what is said, almost at half paid wages, from secure good wages and relatively good wages, not fantastic wages, but relatively good wages, secure, slightly secure jobs, to power looms, which are workshops, power looms based on, and where they almost all this time worked at half the wages. And even from there, the condition could become worse, and they could go down to becoming street vendors at maybe one-third of the wages and one-third of the conditions of life they had when they had. So you could have processes which are pushing people from down the ladder through this. Informalization can happen within the informal sector. And the most important category, the most important and in a way slightly problematic category, which is known as the self-employed. Today I heard the term self-entrepreneurship, which is a better term. At least you are entrepreneur yourself. Here is a peculiar term, mainly English in origin, self-employed, which means that I somehow alienate myself and then I employ myself. I have never understood how can you take yourself out and employ yourself. But this is a category very well known. But this self-employed is a huge category. It includes peasants who work on the have little farms of their own, and also financial consultants or investment bankers who are, or what do you say, consultants, freelance consultants. So a whole range of workers who do not have direct employer-employee relationship constitute one of the biggest form of what I call informalization from below. So this is one way of looking at it. Informality and invisibility, and I've, this is a small point, but which is perhaps related to the question, the kind of thing we saw. Informalization, both from above below, seems to stem naturally. Naturally here means from purely market-related reasons. And since market is the new nature, we always assume that whatever happens, it must be natural. But what is occluded in this process of the naturally occurring or market driven idea of informalization is the occlusion of the role of the state. That the state was central in creating the market and central also in creating informality. Now, this is a slightly complicated point, but we must understand the state has been the center point through several mechanisms, which is difficult to perhaps illustrate, excepting in one of the little films we had of Mexican police entering to dismantle the shops of this. That's the only time we can see state perhaps directly there, but otherwise, and state here is merely someone who's trying to regulate and unregulate it, without realizing that the state itself is in the first place provided, undergirded the process through which informalization happens. It's a difficult point to explain quickly, but it can be very easily demonstrated. Informality and invisibility. Now, this is a crucial point, and we have many ways of looking at it. One way of what Thomas Elsesser had shown, and this informalized, what does invisibility of work means of through this process of informality? I just take one example. This is the graph of, this is my artwork, my contribution to the artwork, brilliant artwork done. The decline since 1980s, roughly, massive decline in the number of strikes in India. And this can be perhaps replicated elsewhere in many other countries. But I just want to show you. And the green line is the what is known as the lockouts. Lockouts are, is a strike by capital, and that's a strike by workers. And you can see lockouts are slowly have, in fact, become more than the number of strikes. This I take, why should I take strikes as a sign of public, the visibility of the workers, or visibility of workers. This is the very, very important point about to be publicly visible, you needed to go on a strike. Otherwise, work was happening inside factories where you did not have access. People couldn't film, couldn't go inside. It was like a private property. To go into strike is a you have to be going to strike. It was the only way workers had devised over a century, or more than a century, more, many centuries perhaps, a collective withdrawal from labor power, of their labor power in a public sense, in a public form. It was not only a strike against particular capital, it was also a, it was a communication to the public that we exist, we are here. We are here, and we can't be always pushed back into it. And this, I just take a very crude indicator of the what we would call the visibility of workers. I take on the next point, which is central to the panel, about valorization. And we have heard a lot of interesting take on it. I just have one simple, maybe you can see this. The line which is going up, which goes up, is the profit, share of profit in gross value added. That means, let's say, national income, how much of it goes for profit, how much of it goes to wages. If we make a very, there are, of course, cost of raw material, we're just taking out, we just take out the share of wages and share of profit. This is this Caesar's, the Caesar of diverging profit from and declining, so rising profit and declining share of wages is the crux of the current form. And if you can make out, it has started happening very clearly from about 1990s in India, but there are this tendency is demonstrated in almost all countries, including Germany perhaps, but also in France and in United States and United Kingdom. This gap, this ratchet is the basis, on which we have the process of So I take the simplest, as far as I knew, valorization is a concept which is attached to capital. Valuation, we might value our work, but valorization, I always took it, is a moment in the trajectory of capital. It's a process by which living labor is transformed into dead labor, by which dead labor augments itself by sucking in living labor. And this is the process. This is the process which Marx defined and continuously defined. This is the valorization. This valorization was based on the devalorization of labor and simultaneous devalorization. That means labor losing out as capital gains. Now, this was this process. Of course, Marx was not looking at this as a continuous process. This is a process which produced its own internal contradiction and its own opposite. The more you push down labor till the point of vanishing, if you actually kill, make, if there are no labor, living labor at all, dead labor cannot then move. It always needs a little bit of blood in order to suck and grow. It's a zombie which realizes, oh, it can only live through that. But so this process, and also the current crisis, arises in some sense out of this ratchet effect, rising profits and declining share of wages. So I'll have something to say about valorization and devalorization in this way, the way I've been thinking about. But there is, as I said, there is always a dialectical moment which is the opposite of the process that. It's always always wrong to, or in some sense, it's not very easy to think only one-sidedly. Neoliberal attack or neoliberal, I think we have had long time thought about it as a kind of phase in which is purely one-sidedly developed. If you think a little bit about it, and this is the main point of my presentation or my thoughts on the film, that we must think also the possibility, not just the possibility, the actual existence of the opposite. So invisibility, this process, this ratcheting which has produced the decline of visibility, public visibility, that which has produced this invisibility also in strange manner has made labor ubiquitous. So labor is generalized, it's properly generalized. It's no longer a gift, it's generalized in its, in the sense generalized, moved beyond all boundaries which had been created, the boundaries of forms of work, boundaries of space, and boundaries of time. These three boundaries are crossed over and become general. So this invisibility is happening precisely at a time when labor is ubiquitous. It is everywhere. It is everywhere. So how do you handle these two things? A kind of a decline of public visibility and a ubiquity, a generalization. And there is, in this double process, perhaps exists a certain way of thinking. So in informalization has invisibilized labor but made labor ubiquitous, general, everywhere, broken down the traditional boundaries between productive work, non-productive work, reproduction, production. So that's why I find it completely understandable that there are all kinds of work, but they are all on the same page. There's no such division between these, productive and unproductive, between labor in agriculture, industry and services. The standard definition, first people are in agriculture, they go into industry, then into services. This is all broken down. You might have industry inside agriculture, agriculture inside industry, and so on and so forth, and many other ways. Spaces of work, home and work, the classic, the great struggle which workers wage to divide or to make home and work different, to create the division between work and non-work, is broken down. It's broken down. The same process of informalization has broken down these concepts. Spaces of work, home and work, and then the most important point, as a historian for me, extremely important, is the coexistence of different temporalities. Our notions of labor had been very strongly based on certain transitions which happened over time. There was a phase when everyone was a craftspeople or agriculture, then they moved into factory production, into assembly line, Fordism, post-Fordism. We have a standard narrative of the development of particular ways of work. What we find today, the coexistence of different temporalities at the same time, the divisions which were the forms of work which we thought had been abolished, had been taken away, have returned with a vengeance. Things which we thought were merely residual or merely marginal have acquired centrality. So this kind of coexistence of temporality, in fact, is the same thing. It is no longer possible to say that India today is Germany's 18th century. We, India and Germany, we live in the same time. That's the most important point of this 400. India, Germany, or wherever, Boston, all of us are in the same time, but with different, maybe within the same time, there are different temporalities. So this coevalness is a coevalness, which is so central to our understanding of modern world, is also to be taken to for labor. We cannot think these are marginal labor who should have gone in. They've returned. Bondage has returned. Slavery has returned. And so has, we have new kinds of cognitive labor, and so on and so forth. We have the most advanced sector and the most backward sector living cheek by jowl together, but linked. So what do you say? Why do I say this? I think it's important to understand that that the process of valorization that I discussed, and which is the process of capital, moment of capital, has always had a counter. I want to point out that is there a process of counter valorization, and can we see it in the things which we are seeing with the seven eight films that we saw? I saw in everywhere. What is this counter valorization, and what is then, if the invisibilization process that I'm discussing, which is linked to a process of valorization of capital and devaluation of labor, is there a revisibilization? Is the ubiquity of labor producing a new visibility? not just new invisibilities, but perhaps new visibilities are coming up. And we should be careful. And I think this project is already bringing out the new visibility of labor, the new visibility of labor in a great sense. So I would say counter-valorization or revisibilization. I just give you two examples from the films we saw. Now, what does this revisibilization or counter-valorization that I talk about? I had very interesting takes by Gertrude Kork on the question, and also by previous speakers on the question of valorization. And I think but what I find in both the Argentinian dry cleaner's insistent gaze at us, or in that woman while knocking continuously, and is it seeking attention, or is she imprinting herself in the public? She's not demanding. She's not begging. She's demanding attention. She is putting her face forward. The Argentinian dry cleaner, maybe he's, but he's looking, by looking at the camera, what an earlier philosopher said, he is demanding access to that public pool of resources. He's not only looking at the camera, he's entering the public. So there is a process by which I would say the value, and look at the processes of where is value taken out from. Capital had, even in Marx, only productive labor. Those which produce surplus value are the only labor to have been thought about. But that's gone. That's nonsense. Even during Marx's own time, it was nonsense. The number of workers who did domestic service were far more than the number of workers who worked in factories. The domestic workers, women workers, were far more. But it was never recognized. Marx thought these are workers whose services are consumed and it vanishes. It never gets into part of the process of valorization. And this neglect, it's a serious neglect. This neglect today makes us look at all this as marginal, as something. What we should be looking at is how these forms of labor have persisted, not just persisted, they persisted obstinately and have connected. And this is what I would like to, in some sense, end my talk by quoting. Maybe you can see there, Eigensinn. The term which is actually, I knew that the origin of the term was actually in Oscar Necht and Alexander Kluge's work, but it has just come out in English. I never read that in English. But it is in Alf Lütke, a labor historian from whom we have learned a lot. It's in his work that Eigensinn has come out. Is labor, whom you had thought had vanished, who is invisibilized, he still persists. Like a hand, a child's hand, who had continuously been pushed back into the grave, but her hand kept sticking out. The pure obstinacy of labor. It's unassimilable other of capital, which cannot be fully assimilated. It exists as its opposite all the time. This I want to show with a little bit about a small snippet from a strike done by a young filmmaker, not a filmmaker, young student, Ayan Minal. He made this little film of a strike on a place which had never seen strikes, the most horrendous workplace in the center of Delhi, where they make hot roll steel utensils, and where every worker whom I met during the strike was marked or scarred because of this, injured in some ways, cut, hands cut, or because of the steel, they had to throw these hot steel plates, and all of them were scarred. It's in this that last year they had a long strike for 33 days to just get 8-hour work day. Now they work 12 hours, they're demanding 8-hour work day, and it's just that you recognize us. I want to show you a little bit of that, the snippet of that strike, of the informal workers. Can I?
कानून को लागू कराने के लिए के गृह मंत्रालय को जाकर के घेरे वो भी देखना पड़ेगा तैयार है भाई कुछ लोग कम आवाज देते हैं मेरे को बड़ा दिक्कत होता है तैयार है मजदूर जिंदाबाद जिंदाबाद
बंद कर दूंगा।
अपने अपने घर जाएंगे, नहा धो करके खाना खाएंगे, आराम करेंगे, और रात में कोई साथी किसी भी व्यक्ति को बंद कराने ना जाए, सिर्फ उसका नाम लिखने के वहां फैक्ट्री है। समझ गए कि नहीं समझ गए? कोई भी साथी रात में या आप सामने।
थैंक यू वेरी मच।